Hello.
This is Renaissance. You're listening to 90.1 FM Stereo WUSB Stonybrook.
Shadows, darkness follows quiet shadows. You walk beside a shadow.
Stardate June 22nd. On this date in 1978, astronomers made one of the most unexpected discoveries in the solar system. They found a big moon for the small outer planet, Pluto. Pluto's moon was a surprise, partly because Pluto itself was long thought to be an escaped moon of Neptune. Now it's more likely that Pluto never orbited Neptune at all. Instead, some astronomers think that besides Pluto and its moon, there are other small bodies in the outer solar system that remain to be found. Pluto's moon was discovered by an astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory. In some photographs taken with a telescope, James W. Christie noticed a bulge on Pluto. It was far too large a bulge to be an ordinary surface feature. It turned out to be Pluto's moon. The pair looked attached in the photograph because they're close to each other and very far away from us. The moon was given the name Charon for the mythological ferryman who rowed souls across the river Styx into Pluto's underworld. During the 1980s, Pluto and its moon were eclipsing each other as seen from our vantage point on Earth. The eclipses happened every few days until just last fall. What astronomers saw was just a drop in the overall amount of light from the Pluto-Charon system. The changes in the amount of light helped reveal the orbits and masses, the sizes and shapes, and perhaps even some surface features of these two tiny worlds. This is Stardate, and we want to send you a copy of Stardate magazine. To receive one, please send your name and address and a dollar for postage and handling to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now
return to
our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
Changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Did you say 9?
New York, Paris, London, Rome. Young men and women back away from home. Sydney, Berlin, Baghdad, Tel Aviv, facing off at each other for the soul is a free day to go.
What did you say?
9.
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Fox.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Hello. Your international call cannot be completed as dialed. If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
4471 for Inner London and 4481 for Outer London.
My Bruder is
Führer. Please redial using the correct code. 4471 for Inner London and 4481 for Outer London.
We are sorry. Your international call cannot be completed as dialed.
We seem to have a multitude of recordings tonight. I hit the wrong button. Knocked myself right off the air there for a second. We have a lot of recordings hanging around, sort of spitting themselves out here. What we do is collect recordings, and then they all sort of spit themselves out about this time of the week. It's something strange, I'll grant you. The program is Brain Damage, and we do this every week. We do something similar every week anyway. And what we are going to do, as usual, this week is go into the current edition of Moscow Mailbag, just off the boat, or airplane, or whatever it is that makes it show up here. And hopefully there'll be a question from one of our listeners on this week's Moscow Mailbag. One of our listeners who has had the guts to actually write a letter to Moscow Mailbag, care of Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR, mentioning that they hear it every Saturday about this time on WUSB in Stony Brook. Would be real nice to hear that on Moscow Mailbag. And we also have the rest. Actually, what we have right now is we have a CD from Screaming Target, which just came in this week. It was found by our scouts overseas. whose sole responsibility in life is to find these kind of things. This has not been released over there yet, and it's not going to be released over here, supposedly, this year, unless a lot of people call Island Records and make sure that it gets released. What we're going to do is play the entire CD single, which is four songs altogether, two of which we may have heard last week, but we're not certain because it just might be a little bit different. We're not 100% certain about that. So get your tape recorders ready for that, can pass it around and trade it, whatever you need to do with these things. It's probably the only time in American radio you'll ever be hearing this. Plus, we'll have news of the new Big Audio Dynamite record, which is coming out real soon, and we'll be taking phone calls and talking about this week's news, and we'll have tripods up at 11 o'clock, and all kinds of other surprises. So stay right where you are. Don't move. Don't get up. Don't do anything. Just hang out. Listen to the radio, because we're going to take you on a little trip. And our first stop is behind the slowly dissolving Iron Curtain, Moscow Mailbag.
And this is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here's Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. The first one comes from John Clifford, attorney at law from Manchester, Connecticut. He writes, "It is most alarming that President Gorbachev is subject to unjust attacks from demagogues like Yeltsin, and at the same time from those who yearn for a return to the days of repression. Joe, would you comment on that?"
Well, first of all, I do not consider Yeltsin a demagogue. His plan of pulling us out of the economic crisis is perhaps the only workable program we had so far. Yeltsin stands for freedom of enterprise, freedom of business. He is for energetic privatization of our economy, for economic openness, and for liberalizing prices. The plan explains in detail the steps to be taken toward a market economy. I also feel that Mr. Gorbachev has finally understood that unless we curb the bureaucratic system and actually go over to a market economy, we will not get the support we're seeking from the seven developed countries, who will not invest money if they feel it'll go down the drain. The fact that Mr. Gorbachev's emissaries have gone to the United States, I think, proves his understanding of the situation at last. Now, as for criticism from the hardliners that Mr. Gorbachev gets, they unfortunately are a force to be reckoned with. But I feel they are losing ground steadily, but they are losing ground.
And John Clifford also writes in his letter, "Events in Eastern Europe demonstrate that democracy and free elections do not automatically create prosperity. The people must realize that hard work alone can produce food, consumer goods, and all the rest."
I fully agree with you that democracy and free elections do not create prosperity. But you see, you've got to agree that hard work alone doesn't either. You've got to have the incentive to work hard, and the ability to buy what you need for the money that you've earned. And only a developed market economy can provide this.
Now, Jeremy King of Swindon Wilts, Great Britain, asks, "How big is Red Square, and what is it used for?"
I'd like to begin by saying that I think Red Square is one of the most beautiful squares in the world. It's almost a half a mile long and something like 400 feet wide. I think St. Basil's Cathedral, in which, after so many years, services have finally been held, I think St. Basil's is as much a symbol of Moscow and the Soviet Union, maybe, as the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben in London, or the Eiffel Tower in Paris, or the Opera House in Sydney, Australia, or the Empire State Building in good old New York. Now, all the years of Soviet government, Red Square was used for the annual demonstrations and parades on May Day and November 7th. November 7th is the anniversary of the revolution. But things have changed today. I also would like to mention, since I'm speaking about Red Square, that the first American to be invited to stand on Lenin Mausoleum was General Eisenhower and Averell Harriman back in 1945. Red Square was the scene of our victory parade after the war, and it welcomed the first man in space, Yuri Gagarin, in 1961.
Jeremy also asks, what is the size of the Caspian Sea and how much wildlife has it got?
Well, let's begin with wildlife. The Caspian sturgeon is our main source of delicious caviar, of which there's pretty little these days. The Caspian also has such fish as roach, herring, and pike perch. The Volga empties into the Caspian, and in the delta, you'll find ducks, swans, pelicans, and also the Caspian Sea is noted for its beautiful pink flamingos. Though the Caspian is called a sea, it actually is the biggest lake in the world. Like a sea, it is very stormy at times, exceedingly stormy, and it's deep. The deepest point is over 3,000 feet. Unfortunately, it is fast shrinking in size. Another oddity is that it is 93 feet below the level of the world ocean. In other words, what you would call below sea level. You want the size? Well, it's about 760 miles long and an area much bigger than the Great Lakes combined.
Tamara Smith of Washington says she wants to learn about our music, dances, history, entertainment, the people, religion, flag, weather, and terrain. Also, our language, clothes, food, and money system.
Wow. Tamara, that would take several volumes, especially the history part. What I suggest is that you send me some concrete questions, and I'll be happy to answer them. You say you're interested in our language. Which one? We speak over 100. And some of these languages are as different as English and Chinese. When you ask about the weather, let me ask you where. When roses bloom in Georgia in January, it's icy cold in northern Siberia. Well, the difference is as great as between, say, Arizona and North Canada. So I'm expecting your letter tomorrow.
Now a letter from Clarence Moe of Tucson, Arizona. I think it would have done more good if Shevardnadze had stayed at his previous post and had constantly worked with Baker.
Maybe you're right, Clarence, but a man, of course, has a right to his feelings and he has a right to decide for himself. Shevardnadze was very heavily pressured by the right-wing hardliners. He was accused of surrendering East Germany, East Europe, of being unpatriotic, of disintegrating the socialist camp. He was not satisfied with the answers of the chief military prosecutor on the events in Tbilisi and Georgia, when a peaceful demonstration was attacked by the army with poison gas and spades, which led to quite a few deaths. Shevardnadze could not stand the approval of brute force. He could not stand the lies and the applause that the speech of the prosecutor got. Shevardnadze felt the growing pressure of the hardliners, and by his action, by resigning, he wanted to draw the attention of the democratic forces to this danger. And in that, I think he succeeded.
Another question, are there permafrost regions in your country?
Oh, yes. Much of our north lies in the permafrost region. It is woodless, with a gray sky above. It's called the tundra. It stretches along the polar seas for thousands of miles from one end of the country to the other. Geese and countless flocks of ducks cackle in the lakes, and you hear the cries of snipes. And, of course, in summer, there are clouds of gnats. Snow lies on the ground for about 9 months of the year, and bitter frosts hold the land in their grip. The white partridge and the polar owl are the only members of the feathered tribes that brave the winter up there. The polar fox changes its red coat for a white one, and the reindeer digs deep into the snow in search of lichen. And to get its food, it has to bury its hairy head right up to the antlers in snow. People there dress in furs from head to foot. The tundra is 6 times larger than France in area. In some places, permafrost is hundreds and hundreds of feet deep. This is a huge natural refrigerator. It has preserved whole carcasses of mammoths and woolly rhinoceros, dating back to the Stone Age. But, you know, there are quite a few cities in the permafrost area, with the buildings standing on stilts, so the ground under them would not melt, and the buildings, naturally, would not collapse. It's a bit different from Tucson, Arizona, isn't it, Clarence? But you've got permafrost in North Canada, too.
And do you have bison in the USSR?
Oh, yes. We do. We have the aurochs. It's the European bison. They look very, very much alike. Mighty animals and very beautiful animals. You find them in Belarusia and some in the North Caucasus. Very powerful animals, too. In Belarusia, they're bred in a reserve called the Belovezhskaya Pushcha, if you can pronounce that, on the border with Poland. And incidentally, the Minsk truck plant has the aurochs as its trademark.
Clarence also wants to know, how will Soviet-Japanese relations improve since Gorbachev visited Tokyo?
Well, you know, Gorbachev called his visit to Japan a prologue to major breakthroughs. Let's hope it will be a prologue. Especially since we're expecting a visit from a Japanese leader this summer. Although Mr. Gorbachev met Prime Minister Kaifu no end of times during his visit, he also met the emperor, the presidents of all the biggest companies, and many documents were signed. So relations, you see, are improving. And he got a very warm welcome, that is a fact. But, and this is a very big but, there was no big step forward in our business relations. The stumbling block is the problem of the 4 tiny Soviet islands just north of Hokkaido, which the Japanese claim are theirs, and we claim are ours. You know, there's been talk ever since the 50s that we may give them to Japan, or we may return to Japan, if we sign a peace treaty, which is still hanging in the air. On the other hand, many of our papers advocate to get their credits and investments, it's worth giving up these islands. But the right wing says, stop ladling out and handing out Soviet territory. Well, let's see what the near future will bring.
Now, have you replaced dog sleds with motorized sleds?
Not all by far. But up in the north, many of our northern ethnic groups harness reindeer to a sled like Santa Claus. They even hold regular reindeer sled races.
Are your trains diesel or electric powered?
Both. Today, about 60% or more of the passenger haulage is done by electric locomotives. We do have the world's, incidentally, largest network of electric railroads. Whoever that may be, we need to modernize and renew our rolling stock, our locomotives. We have to renew a large portion of the tracks, or to be more concrete, of the ties. And the man in the street, you know, here, will not say a good word for our railroads. Bad service all around, I'm afraid.
And do you plan to build high-speed electromagnetic trains?
You know, they're still in the experimental stage, so it's not really worth talking about them.
And I guess it's time for the wrap-up joke, Joe.
Well, let's see. A husband said to his wife, how come you always reply to my questions with a question? Do I? The wife replied. Another one. In the maternity home, a nurse brought out triplets to the expectant young father. After hesitating, he said, if you don't mind, I'll take the middle one.
And that was Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are most welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2310 and 0210 UTC and on the West Coast at 0410 and 0610 UTC.
And, of course, those times they mention are for people with shortwave radios. If you don't have a shortwave radio, go rush right out and buy one because you can hear all kinds of interesting things. Of course, the sound quality won't be as good as it is here, but you'll certainly wake yourself up to all kinds of news all over the world. And that was Moscow Mailbag. Next installment will probably be on next week at about this time. Oh, joke of the week. You know, it used to be the jokes of the week on Moscow Mailbag had to do primarily with Soviet life, but now they seem to just be one-liners. I don't know what's going on over there. I really don't. The program is Brain Damage, and we'll be with you until midnight. Coming up next feature of the program is latest bit of music from, I guess it all stems from The Clash, you know, we sort of take it from there and branch out. And The Clash broke up into several pieces, one of which was Big Audio Dynamite. Big Audio Dynamite has broken up, and one of the pieces of Big Audio Dynamite is Screaming Target. That's what we have tonight. Is, I want to say a 12-inch single because it's actually a CD. We heard the first part of this last week, but it's quite possible, and since I haven't been able to analyze it completely, it's quite possible that the first two songs have slight differences. So we're going to play four songs, three of which are really the same song, but different mixes. The song is the single, which is being released over in England, and it's not being released here because they don't feel that this kind of music is appropriate for this country. So what I am doing is I am asking people to call Island Records and say politely, you know, you guys are a bunch of schmucks if you don't release this record because, you know, we don't hear very many new and exciting sounds in this country. So what we'll do is we'll give out the number later. We'll play the music first. The single is called Knowledge and Numbers. What we'll hear first is a 7-inch mix, which is kind of funny because I haven't seen a 7-inch record in a long time. I don't even know if it's really on a 7-inch single, but 7-inch mix, that'll be followed by Knowledge and Noises, the Depth Charge mix. Then we're going to hear a different song. It's called Tona MC, the Singing Lesson. Now, if you're really, really good, and if you've really paid attention over the past few months, you'll know that we played a song like that when it was released back with the Who Killed King Tubby single back in 1990. Listen to me, back in 1990, I don't believe it. Well, anyway, that song was kind of a humorous song about Don Letts, the leader of Screaming Target, who was kind of uncomfortable with his singing voice. This version is slightly different, slightly different. Now, you would really have to be into it a lot to notice the differences, seeing as how you can't even get the song in this country. But if you did manage to record it the first time we played it, or any other time that it was played on USB, then you can compare it. But we'll be playing the second version of that song. It's just got a couple of subtle differences. And we'll be wrapping it up with Knowledge and Numbers, the Killer Hertz mix. And that's the longer of the three mixes. Then we'll be back talking about the week's news, taking phone calls, and, of course, visiting with the tripods. That's required in the contract. So get your recorders or whatever and ready. Be hearing Screaming Target after a pause so that my voice doesn't wind up on people's tape recorders, assuming they want to tape this. The Knowledge and Numbers single mix here on Brain Damage.
Knowledge. Knowledge. Rick, and we decided to make a group. And they have to play bass, and Rick to play drums, but...
The music's rocking, the people are swing. There's only one problem, the dread can't sing. Echo reverb, all I can get. See you on break, they take 200 thread.
And into the ring, show now.
In lessons begun, gun. What's in the inbox when I started to run?
Come, come, come.
I went me out of ya. See the dance, I'm me over la. What shall I do? She shot it right, so she must have a clue.
Come on, who?
Talk it to me. And say, you don't have to use it to see. She talk like queen, queen, so kind of stupid, you know what I mean? A woman full of tradition or class. She talks shit, be a man just rock.
Exercise the free.
Two on quality, more used to a thing from your belly. Agility, we have the intention but not ability.
Exercise
the better than your, proud of people may can't take no more.
to everything. Brothers and sisters, you know what I'm saying. Hit it on the show. Nice number.
And there we have it, the single release from Screaming Target. We heard Knowledge and Numbers 7-inch mix, Knowledge and Noises Depth Charge mix, Tona MC The Singing Lesson, and Knowledge and Numbers The Kilohertz mix. And that's an import from England only. And the odds of you getting that record would be very, very, very slim unless people can convince Island Records to release it in this country. And I don't have the number on me, so let's journey out and find it ourselves. It's in New York City.
New York telephone, Mr. Belton.
Yes, hello. We need the number for Island Records in New York City.
Thank you.
The number is area code 212-477-8000. Area code 212-477-8000. If you need further assistance, a directory assistance operator will return.
Well, I think we've gotten all the assistance we need. So that's the phone number to advise people on what kind of music you want to hear. 212-477-8000. Of course, I don't think they're there now, but they'll probably be there during the week. And it sure would be nice if the voice of the people, voice of radio listeners, actually got something good accomplished music-wise. I'd sure like to hear what people thought of that. That's been released as a single, CD single, and goes with the album which we heard over the past couple of weeks, the album called Hometown Hi-Fi. Now, Big Audio Dynamite 2 is the other half of BAD. Actually, only Mick Jones remains from the original Big Audio Dynamite. However, he's gotten a bunch of new people, and they're continuing. They released something of a record this past year, back in 1990. It was called Kool-Aid, but it, for some reason, doesn't count as a record. It was never really released that much. It was limited issue, and I don't think it's possible to get that anymore. We played it a few weeks ago. However, in a couple of days, and this includes America, there will be a new record out called The Globe. And that's going to have a lot of the same songs, probably different mixes from Kool-Aid. But We'll play that as soon as we get it, too, because we're always interested in following certain people around as they do various things. It's 10:54, and we've got tripods coming up in about 6 minutes. But before we do that, we want to take a look at what's going on in the world. And this is a very momentous day for lots of us, but especially me, because for the first time ever, first time in recorded history, as far as I can tell, certainly the first time that I've been alive this has happened, the little tiny country of Albania has made the top story on the Associated Press Newswire. Of course, they did it with a lot of help from Secretary of State James Baker, because he happens to be over there, but the fact of the matter is they are number one. In fact, I saw film coverage from Albania last night. I've never seen that before on ABC's 2020. And I'm sure if you tune in your newscast, your national newscast, whatever time that goes on, you'll see some sort of a report from Albania, which for many years has been an isolated, closed, totalitarian regime. Well, that's all changing now, and people are starting to find out more about what goes on over there. So anyway, to lead off the news, boisterous chance of... Well, what a way to start off. Boisterous chance of Bush and America, America have greeted Secretary of State James Baker on his visit to Albania. Today, Baker delivered a $6 million aid package to the isolated Balkan state and encouraged lawmakers to stay on the road toward democracy. I mean, can you imagine if, you know, somebody from Albania came over here and we were chanting Albania, Albania? I just don't see it. I don't think we can imagine what that's like. But time will tell. Time will tell what happens over there. Police in Redding, California say the pilot of a stunt plane was killed and at least six spectators were injured when the plane crashed during an air show today. Didn't we say about a year or so ago that all those air show crashes they were having in Europe, it was only a matter of time before such marvelous things were happening right over here? Well, here we are, folks. A police spokesman says those injured in the crowd were hit by debris when the T-34 single-engine military trainer crashed at about 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. our time. It had been flying in a four-plane formation, imitating the Blue Angels flight precision team, up until that last little stunt where it crashed into the ground. Well, they sometimes do that too, I understand. Sources say the latest embarrassment surrounding White House Chief of Staff John Sununu's travel practices doesn't appear big enough to warrant his resignation, said one official. It hasn't reached critical mass yet. The White House is clamping down on Sununu's use of corporate jets. There has also been controversy over his use of military aircraft and a government limousine for personal and political trips. The senior Shiite Muslim cleric in Lebanon says freedom for Western hostages is not imminent, but that their captivity is nearing an end. Right. Okay, I don't quite understand that. But apparently their captivity will be over, but their freedom will not begin. Makes about as much sense as anything else over there does, but the cleric Sheikh Mohammed Mahdi Shamsedine told the Christian Voice of Lebanon radio station that the hostage situation is much better now than any time in the past. Don't know whose perspective they're looking at it from, but 13 Westerners are missing in Lebanon, most are believed held by pro-Iranian Shiite militants. And Muslims worldwide are celebrating the four-day Feast of Sacrifice, which is Islam's holiest holiday. Pilgrims congregated at the Grand Mosque in Mecca to hear calls for Islamic unity. The pilgrimage has been reported free of trouble so far, despite fears that supporters of Iraqi President Saddam Hussein might protest the presence of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. The president of Germany placed a wreath today on the graves of German and Soviet soldiers on this, the 50th anniversary of the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union. As a young infantryman, President Richard von Weizsäcker, I believe, was part of the invasion force. The memorial service capped a series of ceremonies, news specials, and national introspection. That's right, he was on the wrong side. The new Prime Minister of India is warning his government will have to adopt unpopular measures to control a looming economic crisis. In a speech on state-owned television, Prime Minister P.V. Narasimha, I'm sorry, there's a whole pronunciation guide over here, okay, Narasimha Rao, said there are no soft options left. The country has accumulated debts of $63 billion and inflation has reached double digits. The United States is blocking a provision to a treaty affecting the frozen continent of Antarctica, saying it needs to study the proposal more. The provision would ban mining in Antarctica for 55 years. The U.S. decision to withhold approval has forced postponement of a signing ceremony scheduled for tomorrow. A new South African committee has been formed in an attempt to end violence in the country's black townships. The three main players announced today will be the government, the African National Congress, and the rival Inkatha Freedom Party. Results of a Newsweek poll released today suggest 90% of Americans think they have a right to know if their health care providers are infected with the AIDS virus. 65% said they'd stop going to an infected doctor or a dentist. And finally, some rock and roll memorabilia went on the block at Sotheby's Auction House in New York today. Among the buyers, comedian Eddie Murphy, who spent more than $26,000 to buy a vest and headband once owned by Jimi Hendrix. Entertainer Wayne Newton was also there. He paid more than $13,000 for a handwritten letter by Elvis Presley. Handwritten letter by Elvis Presley. I don't know where people's priorities are. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, where $13,000 would sure mean a lot to us, and we wouldn't buy no letter with it either. It's 18 degrees Celsius in downtown metropolitan Stony Brook, at 64 in the Fahrenheit scale. Tonight we're expecting occasional rain, low around 60. Chance of that rain is 90% for all you gamblers out there. Sunday, chance of rain in the morning, becoming partly cloudy in the afternoon, high around 70. Chance of rain, 50%. For Sunday night, clearing, low in the mid-20s. Just seeing if you're awake, low in the mid-50s, all right? And for Monday, mostly sunny and pleasant, high in the mid-70s. Once again, 18 degrees Celsius, and that's 64 on the Fahrenheit scale. Most amazing. Well, we have the tripods, right? I think the tripods are ready to come at us with the latest from their adventures over in Europe, I believe. We'll see what they're up to. We'll be back talking about various strange things that went on in the news this week. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 632-6901, area code 516. This is Brain Damage.
Did you ever wonder about the vast variety of musical rhythms that stretch throughout the continent of Africa? If so, tune in every Thursday evening between 7 and 8:30 for the African Beat. My name's Chris, and you're invited to join me every Thursday evening to explore the traditional and popular rhythms of the African continent that have so widely influenced today's music. So keep it tuned here at 90.1 FM for non-commercial alternative radio at its best. Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB, in Stony Brook.
Radio Free Long Island, an express written consent with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the episodes of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. We left our friends Howard and Kathy and Boris last week. The statue for which they had been searching in the sewer system of Nice had just been broken, revealing no treasure inside. And as we join Howard and Kathy, they're hysterically laughing now.
Oh, it doesn't make sense, does it? How could we be laughing after all that's been happening to us?
I don't know, Kathy. What else can we do? We risked our lives for a treasure that doesn't exist. And a statue that's broken into a million pieces.
And we're still risking our lives, Howard. After all, we haven't found a way out of these sewers yet.
That's right.
I do not think it is funny, my friends.
Oh, come on, Boris. Where's your sense of humor?
Just look at the facts. Don't you think they're a trifle bizarre?
kind of out of the ordinary?
You could almost say they're totally ridiculous.
Oh, I can easily say that, Kathy. I mean, I could even say it's absurd.
Absurd. Kind of silly.
Dopey. Foolish.
Asinine.
Yeah.
That's a good word. I've always liked that word, asinine.
I do, too. It's so authoritative.
Yes.
But there's one we're leaving out entirely.
And what word is that?
Stupid.
Oh, yes. Oh, we certainly can't forget that one, can we?
I think stupid is the word that sums up this entire escapade. Now, here we've wasted a totally good vacation, worn ourselves to a frazzle, worried all of our friends and relatives to death while we've been waltzing around in sewers.
My friends, we must cease our babbling and start finding a way out of these here sewers.
That's what we've been talking about for the past 20 minutes, Boris.
Yes, and we've determined that there's no way to get out of here.
Yep. We resigned ourselves to the fact that we're going to spend the rest of our lives right here.
But surely you do not for one moment believe that you will actually spend the remainder of your days beneath these here streets. Yes.
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, that door in front of us is locked tight, and behind us is nothing but corridors that go on forever.
Mr. Tripod.
I mean, if you want to go walking around in the dark and dingy place, searching for an exit that's getting further and further into this cold and clammy pit. Well, you can do just that, but as for me and Kathy...
Mr. Tripod!
What is it, Boris?
Don't you see that sign above your head, Mr. Tripod?
What sign? You mean that one? It says sortie. I don't know what that means.
Mr. Tripod, the word sortie in French means exit.
Exit?
Yes.
You mean... That's an exit sign that we've been standing under all this time?
Oh, Howard, why didn't you know that?
Oh, come on. Kathy, you don't expect me to know everything, do you?
Well, it wouldn't hurt, you know.
How come you don't know it? I mean, why is it always me?
Come now, comrades, we must not bicker at this crucial stage. Let us depart from these here sewers. Straight away.
Okay. Come on, let's go.
I'll be glad to get out of this awful place.
Look, it's a wall we've come to.
We must go up this here ladder, my friends.
Ooh.
It probably goes up to a manhole or some such thing.
Oh, I'll certainly be glad to see the light of day again, that's for sure. I wonder if it is daytime outside.
That looks like a trap door above us.
Can you get a firm grip on it, Boris?
Yes, it is unlocked. And I am opening it now. I will step up past it now.
All right, go ahead, Kathy. You're next.
You'll catch me if I fall, won't you, Howard?
But try not to fall, Kathy.
Don't worry.
Well, here we are.
Where?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Look, I see bars all around us. Almost as if we were inside a cage.
And so, Howard, Kathy, and Boris finally managed to get out of the sewer system under the city of Nice, but apparently have stepped into even more trouble. You'll want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say,
"Hey, let's go back into the sewers."
That's next week on The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Well, I'm sure we've all been reading the newspapers, and we know the story behind the pet cemetery in Middle Island. You know, it's interesting because for years, I've been driving past that place. In fact, once I even stopped in to see what it was like, and there's all these little tombstones with names, Spot and Fido, and people actually name their dogs, things like that. And, you know, final resting place, Spot is running around and somewhere in Happy Valley now. And it was revealed earlier this week that the whole thing apparently has been a sham, and that 250,000 rotting carcasses were dumped into a huge pit. Huge rat-infested death pit, as CBS Radio described it. And It's pretty bizarre. Pretty bizarre to even have a pet cemetery, most people would think. And to see this happen to a place that that you're familiar with. It's rather bizarre and weird and strange. But anyway, according to Newsday, scores of angry animal owners have announced they are filing lawsuits against the Middle Island Pet Cemetery that promised to cremate or bury their pets with dignity, but instead left up to 250,000 animal carcasses to rot in pits in a wooded area at the site. One has to wonder how 250,000 rotting carcasses could escape the attention of very many people. But apparently it did. And meanwhile, the fate of the Long Island Pet Cemetery and the animal remains inside was still undecided as the site remained closed and federal authorities placed a lien on the property. Bereaved pet owners continued to mill outside the locked gate of the cemetery on Route 25, hoping to learn when they would be able to visit the grave sites of animals they paid to have buried there, or exhume them to see if they contain the remains of their own beloved dog, cat, bird, or horse. Others sought to retrieve the carcasses of animals that had never been cremated. Asked what will happen to the animal remains in the graves and pits, Andrew Luger, the assistant U.S. attorney prosecuting the cemetery's owners, said authorities haven't decided. Pet owners filing civil suits, many of whom paid $500 or more to have their pets buried or cremated, said they will demand damages and compensation for fraud, breach of contract, and punitive damages for improper burial. Some of the suits being prepared also seek the right to have the pets exhumed. To all the people whose animals have been treated in this obscene fashion by the principals of the Long Island Pet Cemetery, we are your rallying point, said Jill Frankenberry of Huntington, a pet owner starting a lawsuit in conjunction with members of the Little Shelter Animals Shelter. We are going to do everything we can to see to it that justice is brought to bear on this situation. Speaking at a news conference at Little Shelter's Huntington offices, Frankenberry and several other pet owners estimated more than 100 people will join in the suit, which will be filed in the next 2 weeks by Hop Hog attorney Fred Block. Although the money pet owners could gain from the suit might be negligible, Frankenberry said, money is not the issue. I want these people punished. We trusted these people, and they've abused us. As she spoke, several other pet owners began crying and pulling out photographs of animals they paid to have cremated or buried. In Long Beach, attorney Lawrence Elovich said he filed a $10 million lawsuit against the cemetery yesterday on behalf of Joyce Walt and Michael Bachman of Island Park. Elovich said his clients paid $1,800 to the cemetery to bury their sheepdog, Ruffian, in November 1989, but now they wonder if their dog ever made it to the grave. The Bayshore firm of law firm of Sybin & Sybin also will be filing a lawsuit next week for at least 50 pet owners for fraud. The cemetery was closed Tuesday after federal authorities, working in conjunction with the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office, charged its owner and two employees with mail fraud, saying they buried between 200,000 and 250,000 pets in pits since 1984, although pet owners and veterinarians had paid for cremations. The three are free on personal reconnaissance bonds. In addition, the cemetery burned thousands of other pets together in mass cremations rather than cremating them individually, as owners were promised, the official said. Portions of the ashes from the mass cremations were then mailed or handed to owners with certificates promising they were the remains of their pets when, in fact, they were mixed with those of other pets, they said. Alan J. Strauss, the 35-year-old Dix Hills resident who owns the cemetery, could not be reached for comment yesterday. It's interesting because I went by the cemetery to look at it, and there's all these signs up that say no trespassing. The signs were put there, of course, by the Long Island Pet Cemetery people a long time ago, but somebody scrawled in underneath it, no trespassing, that means you, Alan, referring to the owner, who is now a persona non grata. Bill Monaco, the Hop Hog-based attorney who represented Strauss during his arraignment Tuesday, said Strauss had not made any decision on the future of the cemetery.
Monaco said he believed Strauss would try to cooperate with pet owners, but added that he could not comment further because he had not been formally retained beyond handling the arraignment. Luger said his office has filed a lien on the property to prevent Strauss from selling it, but he added that the federal government hasn't yet decided whether it will seize the property. That's something I don't understand. These people rip off thousands of people on Long Island, and that gives the federal government the right to come in and take the land? I mean, why not give the land to the people that were ripped off? What does the federal government have to do with this? I don't know. What's going to turn into a park or something? It's a complicated issue, according to Luger. It's still an operating cemetery, and there are what may be legitimate private graves there in addition to the animals that weren't properly buried. We're still trying to decide what to do. Part of the decision may hinge on whether soil and water tests at the site show any contamination from the 20 pits, each 15 to 20 feet deep, that were filled with animal carcasses, federal and local officials said. If the site is contaminated, it may have to be sealed off while the state cleans it up or orders its owners to do so. Test results are expected next week. In the meantime, all animals that were in pits remain there, and any other pets dropped off for burial or cremation that hadn't been disposed of by Tuesday have been placed in freezers at the site, according to officials from the Suffolk County Department of Health Services. Gelfand said more than 60 Long Island vets regularly use the cemetery. He added that doctors are not allowed to accept any fees for referring patients to a cemetery or a crematorium, but the operations compete for doctors' business on the basis of price, services, and other amenities. At the cemetery the other day, one woman, June Duarte of Corum, placed a large black ribbon around the neck of a German shepherd-shaped sign outside the gate. She said it was a ribbon of mourning for all the pets, including Lady Carmen and Lucky Lady, the schnauzer and dachshund she'd paid to have cremated there. I wanted the best for them. They were my babies. I just shook the gate last night trying to get it open, she said. I think it's one of the worst things that can ever happen to anybody. Well, I'd like to know if there's anybody out there that has ever had experience with this kind of a thing. Have you ever sent a pet to a cemetery? You know, it's the kind of thing that a lot of people would think would be kind of... I don't know what the word is, but just unusual. And it's probably because a lot of people can't understand the whole meaning of disposing of a pet, I suppose, in a kind of a human way. You know, most people, what do you do with a dead pet? What do you do with your dog when it passes this realm? You bury him in the backyard? Well, if you bury your dog in the backyard, then, you know, is that good enough for other people as well? You know, should dogs be treated as humans? Should humans be treated as dogs? Has anyone ever had an experience with this kind of a thing? 632-6901 is our telephone number. We'll be taking calls on this rather unusual subject. And while people should definitely be upset at this because their money has been taken and their feelings have been tampered with, I don't know. I just have to wonder how much it really matters. You know, once someone or something is no longer with us, you know, how does it matter if you have the ashes of a particular being, or if you know that their remains are in a particular location? Does it really make that much difference? That's a question that's sure to open up quite a few cans of worms tonight. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. Okay, usual intelligence of our callers is manifesting itself. Let's see if we can get some people on the line. 632-6901, area code 516. And tell us how that affects you. Now, Newsday's had a lot of fun with this story. By the way, the article we just read was from Newsday. And they published a list of famous animals, where they were buried, like Mr. Ed. You know where Mr. Ed is buried? He's buried at the residence of Danny and Darlene Snodgrass of Talica, Oklahoma. And Petey, the dog with one black eye from the Our Gang series, is buried in Silver Spring, Maryland. And what else do we have here? Checkers. Former President Richard Nixon's devoted pooch is buried at the Bidawee Pet Cemetery in Wantagh. Thank you for going down there and paying my respects. Also, there's a list of rules. Again, our phone number is 632-6901. For disposing of your pet. And here in Brookhaven Town, backyard burials must be 3 feet deep. In neighboring Smithtown, no ordinances on how to dispose of pets. Cremations available for a fee. In Riverhead, no general rules, but town does own an incinerator for interested parties. And what else here? Let's take a look at Huntington. Cremation was available through the Long Island Pet Memorial. Backyard burials are illegal. Islip, no regulations on backyard burials for cats and dogs. Town's shelter will dispose of dead animals. Southhold does not get involved in burials. It will refer you to a cremation specialist. So it's anarchy out there. Nobody knows what to do with dead animals. But I think we're learning what not to do with dead animals. And that's something where we can all learn a valuable lesson. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, why are you making fun of the people who bury their pets there?
Hey, did I make fun of anybody?
I don't know. I mean, you're saying why... My parents had two little dogs, and they buried them there, and they're heartbroken over this whole deal.
Yeah? Well...
It's horrible, and you wonder why do people spend the money they're dead, and why spend the effort and feelings on them, but, you know, it's our feelings. I had two dogs, two little Scottish terriers.
Uh-huh.
One named Scotty, one named Skinny. And they're gone, and I'm heartbroken.
Well, you see, what I was questioning was, why would someone spend $1,500 to bury a dog? You know, I just don't see the logic behind that. And I'm going to extend that to human beings, too. I don't see the logic of people who save up for their funerals. You know, there's a lot of people that do that.
That money isn't spent on the dead, but those that are still with us. You know what I'm saying? And if you spend a little money, sometimes you feel that you're giving something back to something that's given you so much love.
Uh-huh. But lots of times it doesn't quite work out that way like it did this week, you see.
Oh, well, there are evil people in the world to rip off the poor pet owners.
What do you think is going to happen to this place? What do you think should happen to this place?
Maybe an amusement park or, I don't know, maybe those brown signs with the yellow letters make, you know, maybe make it something like Austin. Maybe Ronald Reagan can come and put a wreath down and... something like that.
Oh, he went to a Nazi cemetery, so I guess a pet cemetery wouldn't be too far out of bounds for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a joking matter. This is very serious.
I realize that. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Okay, goodbye.
632-6901, area code 516. I'll take another call, and we'll see what's going on out there in Middle Island right now. Good evening.
Hi. I'd just like to agree with the last caller about making fun about animals.
Okay.
I had a cat named Fletcher and another one named Johnson. You know, we buried them back up in Westchester, and you know, they were ugly cats. But I mean, you know, I just think that, you know, it's something that you want to do to pay respect to the animal.
Well, it's also something that you want to do out of health considerations too. You know, you have to bury these things or get rid of them in some way. But what I'm questioning, do you want to spend lots of money paying somebody to come up with headstones and certificates and services and things like that? Does it, you know, it just seems like they're preying on people's feelings, and it's kind of artificial. And then I'm extending that to include human beings as well.
Right. I just think that a person should have the right to do that if they want.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I just think that it's something that, you know, I mean, it's just something that they should be allowed to do if they want. You know, I mean, looking back at it, you know, Fletcher wasn't really a great cat at all. It's an ugly cat and everything, but. You know, I'm just happy that we paid respects to him, you know, and I don't know, I just like to defend sort of the right to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, lots of times the best respects you can pay are private respects and not getting some outsiders involved in this that just want to take your money. I mean, would you really think that these people would care that much about other people's pets, you know? They fooled a lot of people, but I don't think they would have fooled a lot of other people, let's put it that way.
Yeah. This is really terrible. I mean, it's terrible what happened here, you know. I mean, it's definitely terrible. I read about it in Newsday, too.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I just hope that it all works out for everybody. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know either, because a lot of people paid for perpetual care, which means for all time their plots are going to be cared for. And obviously that's not going to happen now. So I don't know what happened. You know, there's some kind of a law against building on top of cemeteries. I don't know if that applies to pet cemeteries as well.
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. I mean, I hope Newsday follows up with that.
Yeah, it's all new ground. No one's ever seen anything quite like this before.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks for expressing that, and my heart goes out to you for the loss of your pet.
Thank you.
All right. 632-6901, area code 516. We're talking about pet cemeteries and dead animals and things like that. I wish I could find the song Dead Puppies, you know? I mean, no, this is appropriate. I've never done a show before where that song has been appropriate. It's always been, like, horribly out of place. But now, finally, it's well, maybe I'll find it later. 632-6901. Now, if you actually pick up the phone book and call up the place now, well, now, what do you think happens? Well, first of all, I have to find the appropriate page, which I guess I can't. Okay, I happen to have the number memorized. Yes, I think I have the number memorized. Either that, or we're going to wake somebody up. But let's find out. All right, we're going to dial up the pet cemetery people and see just what happens.
The number you have reached, 924-3939, has been temporarily disconnected. Temporarily disconnected.
I guess that's about all we're going to get out of this. Temporarily disconnected. It's kind of a new one on us. You know, numbers are sometimes disconnected, not in service. Even being checked for trouble. I think that recording would probably be a bit more apropos here, but yeah, that's all we're going to get here. So, there's only one thing we can do. I can't believe nobody's interested in this. Our phone lines are completely empty, devoid of callers. Either people are too scared to talk about, you know, the volatile issue of burying pets, or, as I suspected, nobody really cares. Well, our phone number is 632-6901. Please give us a call, because right now our next step is to reach out and confuse the operator. And the best way to confuse an operator in a case like this is to confront her with a recording that she's never heard before. And that recording is the one which we have just heard. And the best thing we can do right now is try to place a collect call to that number. See what happens.
New York telephone. If you want to place a collect call, dial 1-1. To charge this call to your calling card, dial your calling card number. To place a person-to-person call, dial 0 for the operator.
Well, if we hit 1-1, we'll be faced with the automated operator. Let's try it.
At the customer's request, collect calls may not be made to this number. Please hang up and try another billing option.
Well, how do you like that? How do you like that? You can't place a collect call to the defunct pet cemetery people. We'll just have to go through the operator here and ask her what this all means. And hopefully confuse her in the process.
New York telephone. If you want to place a collect call, dial 1-1. To charge this call to your calling card, dial your calling card number. To place a person-to-person call, dial 0 for the operator.
You notice that they don't tell you what to do if you don't have a touch-tone phone? Shocking, is what it is.
For operator assistance, please stay on the line.
Okay, I'll do that. And callers, please stay
on
the line.
Caller,
yes, operator, I was hoping you could explain something for me. I was trying to make a collect call. Actually, I was trying to dial this number directly.
Your name?
I'm sorry?
They don't accept collect calls at the number.
Right, I found that out, but I tried dialing it direct, too, and I got a recording on it saying the number has been temporarily disconnected. Now, what does that usually mean when you get a recording like
that? Is that the customer asks for the number to be disconnected?
There's no particular reason. I mean, what does that usually mean?
I don't have it. Sir, I couldn't tell you the reason.
Uh-huh. But it's likely to be something like maybe they've gone on an extended vacation or something?
Could possibly be.
Or they can't pay their phone bill, maybe?
Well, sir, I couldn't say whether they paid their phone bill or not. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
When they asked for a temporarily disconnect, that means they want to disconnect for a reason.
Uh-huh. But if the recording had said that...
Hold on for my supervisor.
Oh, okay, great. I get a supervisor. Isn't it fun to get supervisors? You see, they have default time limits, and after about 30 seconds, they have to turn you over to their supervisor because they run out of words, is what it boils down to. I mean, it sounds technical, sounds like I'm speaking about computers, but the fact of the matter is they do run out of words. 632-6901.
Supervisor, this is Vail. May I help you?
Yes, hi. I was just asking the operator about a recording. The recording said that a number was temporarily disconnected. I was just wondering what the difference was between temporarily disconnected and disconnected.
Well, it could have been a request that the number be disconnected for a certain period of time, sir. We don't have that information.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that could be. Well, maybe it may be temporarily disconnected and going to be permanently disconnected, at, you know, very soon for some reason. We don't know what the reason is.
Uh-huh. But are most numbers that are disconnected, do they go through this temporary phase, or do they just become...
Yeah, it depends, sir. It depends on why the number was disconnected.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Many reasons, you know, why numbers could be disconnected. So it goes according to the recording. Sometimes it's a requested, you know, a specific recording is requested. And, you know, we just don't have the information.
I see. While I have you on the line, could you answer one other question for me? Sometimes I get a recording saying this number is being checked for trouble. What does that mean?
Well, it means that there's some kind of problem with the phone.
Uh-huh.
It's being, you know, maybe someone reported it for trouble and it's not yet repaired and they're still checking to find out what the problem is.
I see.
Possibly.
Okay. Well, you've been very helpful then. Thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And there we have it, an operator that actually helped us out and explained what the word temporarily means. Join us again in weeks to come for more adventures with operators. Sometimes they'll answer your questions, and sometimes they'll ask you even more questions. Either way, we've had an effect somewhere. Kind of makes you proud to be an American, but then again, almost anything does these days. 632-6901, area code 516. Get those calls coming in. Talk about pet cemeteries or anything else that happens to be on your mind. And there's other things going on, too. You know, there's Supreme Court rulings that are kind of disturbing to some people, such as one that just came down yesterday saying that erotic nude dancing can be banned by states. 5-4 decision backs limits to free expression. We're going to get into that in just a minute. See who's out there. Good evening.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
Fine. I had a dog who the family loved very much, and when that dog died, we buried him in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
I doubt it was 3 feet under, but that was sufficient for us, and I can't understand why somebody would pay money to somebody else for them to bury their dog.
Uh-huh.
If you have feelings about the dog, you want him close to home.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people, you know, dogs, cats can be substitutes for children, and they feel, I guess, as close to them as a child, and you certainly wouldn't bury your child in the backyard. But, you know, it's something that's hard for us to understand, and I'm, you know, I'm wondering why somebody would pay over $1,000 to bury a dog. It, you know,
I think,
a lot of conflicting things.
I think if everyone buried their children in the backyard, people would prefer to bury their family. People, when they fall ill, they want to be home.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they had a choice, they'd like to be in their own property. But there's been rules established
places for people to go when they die. Obviously, we don't have that with animals.
And, you know, funerals are expensive for anybody. You have to pay all kinds of fees, and it's kind of obscene the way that they rake in the money on these things.
I have one question. I know you've been reading, and I haven't read too much. Are there health hazards from what this place has done? I don't know what the...
They haven't specifically mentioned health hazards, although they've certainly implied it by saying there's, you know, pits with 250,000 rotting carcasses in there.
Well, what's so bad about that? We have a county dump with a lot worse rotting things that are certainly not bioorganic material.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. I know they're upset because it's bordering on the Cathedral Pines land, which is, I believe, county-owned.
But there's nothing toxic. We're not talking about a dry cleaner dumping toxic chemicals. We're not talking about a nuclear power plant leaking.
No, there's nothing toxic about it.
We're talking about natural organic material.
As organic as you can possibly get, yes. So I don't think that
problem.
I don't think that's really an issue there. I think it's more a moral issue, and that's what's being dealt with here.
A moral issue. So there's nothing. These people are just angry because they've been lied to.
Yeah, and their money has been taken. And
I had the impression from your previous call is they didn't care about the money. They just cared that they had feelings for this animal. They entrusted somebody else with their loved animal. And they were betrayed, and that's the whole problem?
I would say that's enough of a problem. Wouldn't you say that?
I think it's a problem, but I also think when something is so important to someone that they should research what the heck they're doing.
Uh-huh.
And if they're willing to go into this place blindly, say, here's my $1,000, and hand over their animal, you know, it's buyer beware sort of thing. I think they should know exactly what's happening to their animal before they do it. And I think I feel the same way with humans.
Now, did you ever pass by this place?
I have.
Yeah, then what were your thoughts beforehand when you would see a pet cemetery?
I thought it was a cute little thing for people who own pets, but I would never get involved.
Uh-huh. Did you ever think it was, you know, ripping people off or potentially ripping people off?
No, I think people have certain needs when their animals die or when anything dies, and this place was meeting their needs, which I see nothing wrong with it. Obviously, you know, a lot of people are disappointed, and I do think that that's wrong, and I do think that the people there should be, well, quote, punished. But I don't know how severely. And what is it that the federal government's taking their property?
That's something I can't understand. The federal government is considering seizing the property. I just don't understand the reason for that. You know, it should be something should be done with it. Yeah, maybe it should be forfeited. But why to the federal government? You know, I don't understand the reasoning.
I know, sounds crazy.
So
I'm glad I had the opportunity to make my comment. Thank
you. Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
And of course, we will simply ignore the fact that that person buried their pet less than 3 feet below ground, because we are not watchdogs here at USB. And what you do on your own turf is your own affair.
Oh, yeah,
good evening.
I love you.
Yeah, you there?
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I just want to say one thing to Carrie, that Adam loves you. Also,
fine.
I just have a question. I have a pet elephant, and
who's
I was wondering if I could get that buried.
A pet elephant?
Yeah.
Yes, but I think you have to go to Capitol Hill for that.
Do I?
Yes.
And, oh, man, the thing is, like, it's going to die in, like, 2 days.
Well, you're not supposed to have elephants in this county anyway.
Well, I mean, can I bury it in your backyard?
Sure, if you can find it. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Yeah, hello.
How you doing?
Not too bad. I just caught the part of your show here, that last caller with the pet cemetery.
Yeah?
I just keep reminded of, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, there was a picture of a guy from, I don't know, Mount Sinai, with a picture of his dog on the front cover of the Newsday, and his dog had a little party hat on.
Yeah?
I kind of think that it's kind of ridiculous to be... You know, I mean, I'd be embarrassed to be on the front page of Newsday with a picture of my dog with a party hat on.
I guess many of us probably...
People bury their pets.
Uh-huh.
You know, and to spend, like I read the article, $3,500 to bury a pet.
$3,500? Boy, that's more than I thought.
A headstone.
That's incredible. That's obscene. But don't you think spending $3,500 for any headstone is obscene, too? You know, I mean, think of how that money could be used.
Well, that's how... Well, when it comes to humans, that's one thing. But when it comes to a pet... I said the same thing to the guys I was working with. They could do a lot more good with the money than go to spend that kind of money on, you know, to bury their pet. I mean, sure, it means a lot to them. I've buried dogs in my backyard, cats, and gerbils and everything else. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go somewhere else and go out of my way to visit them when I could walk out my back door and, you know.
Right, exactly. I think that's probably the best kind of tribute of all is to, you know, bury something in a place where you know where it is and, you know, you've done it yourself, too. You know, that's something to be said for that.
Oh, I would think so.
Okay.
That's about it.
Well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
632-6901. You know, I'm curious as to what the smallest kind of pet you could have possibly buried at this place. You know, if you had a guppy or something that died, would they actually take your money and erect a headstone and have a memorial service and give you a certificate and you know, all that kind of thing? Would they actually do that? And that's something to be reckoned with. I'd sure like to do a little bit of research and see just what kind of pets actually wound up being buried there. Good evening.
Yeah, can I stick the kibbutz, please?
You're going to have to call in on the other line. Well, I'll put you on hold. How's that? All right, they're on hold now, and hopefully kibbutz will get that. 632-6901 is our telephone number. And since we are running a bit low on time, I'm going to have to get into the other section that I wanted to talk about here, which was the Supreme Court and nude dancing. Yeah, nude dancing. Supreme Court ruled yesterday that while erotic nude dancing is a form of expression entitled to a measure of First Amendment protection, states may ban it in the interest of protecting order and morality. Now, somebody suggested before, and I'm going to repeat this at the risk of being sued for stealing their idea, that you could substitute anything that is protected by the First Amendment or by any amendment, actually, and say that while it's valued, while this is important, you can ban it because you're concerned about protecting order and morality. That's a real scary precedent. A real scary precedent. And think what we're talking about here, folks. We're talking about nude dancing, you know? It's not something that's being forced down the throats of people. It's something that's happening behind closed doors in various clubs and establishments. Anyway, the 5-4 decision upheld a public indecency law in Indiana as applied to nude performances in a nightclub and adult bookstore in South Bend. The law, similar to laws in effect in some 2 dozen other states, require female performers to wear at least pasties and a G-string. The parties to the suit had agreed that the performances, while erotic, were not obscene. They were not obscene. Everybody agreed. Supreme Court precedents holding that there is no First Amendment protection for obscenity were therefore not at issue. The court's holding, with a plurality opinion by Chief Justice William Rehnquist, was supported by 3 separate opinions. Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony M. Kennedy joined his opinion, while Justices Antonin Scalia and David Souter wrote separate concurring opinions. Only Justice Scalia said there was no First Amendment protection at all for nude dancing. Civil liberties lawyers who had feared that the court might apply a sweeping analysis that could call into question constitutional protection for many forms of artistic expression said they were relieved by the court's relatively narrow approach. Nude dancing of the kind sought to be performed here is expressive conduct within the outer perimeters of the First Amendment, though we view it as only marginally so, Chief Justice Rehnquist said. Souter provided the majority with a somewhat equivocal 5th vote. His separate opinion indicated discomfort with the public morality rationale on which the Chief Justice's opinion relied. Instead, he said the law was valid because of the state's substantial interest in combating the secondary effects of adult entertainment establishments of the kind involved the case. Yes. He identified those effects as prostitution, sexual assault, and associated crimes. But you didn't know nude dancing did all that. Justice Souter noted that under his approach, it is difficult to see how a state would be justified in applying a public nudity law to prohibit nude performances in such plays as Hair or Equus that were performed somewhere other than an adult theater. The other members of the majority did not address possible applications of the law beyond the confines of the case. Justice Byron White dissented in an opinion that was joined by Justices Thurgood Marshall, Harry Blackmun, and John Paul Stevens, that the performances in the Kitty Cat Lounge may not be high art, to say the least, that may not appeal to the court is hardly an excuse for distorting and ignoring settled doctrine, they said. The Supreme Court had earlier permitted states, as a facet of their constitutional authority, to regulate the use of alcohol, to ban nude dancing in places that serve liquor. The court's view of the question as a matter of First Amendment law had been ambiguous. Well, this whole thing is insane. This whole thing is completely crazy. It's not obscene. Everybody agrees that nude dancing is not obscene, yet it can be banned because of morality considerations. We're moving into some real scary ground here. And there's people, lots of people, actually, that want such a ban in New York. And this means it could be all the closer. We'd like to know if the folks out there believe that nude dancing is a threat. You know, we're not talking about nude dancing in the streets. We're not talking about it in Pathmark. We're talking about it in places where you have a sign up, where you only let people above a certain age in, and where all the people want to be there. You know? What is so wrong with that? Somebody please call me and explain it to me. 632-6901. What is wrong with any action that does not harm another human being? Why does it have to be regulated by government officials and morality experts, these self-appointed morality police? There's no shortage of people like that. 632-6901. I don't know if there's any nude dancing establishments around the area. I haven't heard of any, but if you happen to be at one, please let us know what's going on there tonight. In Hartford, Connecticut, Uncle Al's Cafe across the street from Hartford Police Headquarters featured nude dancers yesterday, as usual. The police and prosecutors there and around the country said the United States Supreme Court decision affirming the right of state and local governments to ban nude dancing, while important as a victory in theory, would have little immediate effect. They said that most of the states with restrictive nudity laws will never stop from making arrests, and that states where such laws are not always vigorously applied, like Connecticut, would probably not start making any more arrests because of the ruling. But some officials and legal experts said the long-term implications of the decision could be more profound. By concluding that nude dancing is a form of symbolic speech that can be regulated, these experts said, legislatures could be inspired to tighten existing laws governing nudity in other settings. Now, it's easy for us to take all this for granted, and that's what we got to be so careful about, is to take something like this for granted, because when you look upon it, you try to look upon these things with kind of a detached view and see just how ridiculous it is. What are we talking about here? Are we talking about people who are hurting each other or, you know, killing each other or something barbaric? No, we're talking about people dancing in the nude. Big deal. Who cares? You know, who really cares? And how can somebody regulate what goes on inside a you know, behind closed doors? How can somebody regulate that? You know, I was watching a film the other night. Film I taped off TV 5 years ago, but I never got to watch it until a couple of nights ago. It was the film Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman, made in something like 1962. And you know, the idiots on I think it was Channel 11, saw fit to censor language on it. You know that line where the main boss in the prison says, when he's setting down the rules, I can be one nice guy, or I can be one real mean son of a bitch. Well, all you heard was son of a, and yeah, the rest was left to your imagination. And there was another film on, I believe it was on last night on Channel 5. It was about nuclear holocaust or something. And somebody said the word ass, you know, a word that's so common and not one of the seven dirty words or anything like that. But they censored that at 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning on commercial TV, they censored the word ass. I mean, what are we living in here? What kind of society are we living in that where this kind of thing is expected? Who are we protecting? And what are we protecting? The whole thing is so crazy. And what it winds up doing is creating not false images, ridiculous images, absurd images. And it also gets in the way. I was really kind of angry when I saw that my favorite line in the whole film of Cool Hand Luke had been tampered with. You know, there's sort of a sense of violation there. The film, for God's sake, was made in 1962, and they're tampering with the language here in the 1990s. It's not right. It should not be happening. Then you turn to public TV, and you see them talking real language there. And, you know, you go over there, and you watch them for a while, and you come back, and you realize, hey, I lived. I survived. My mind was not destroyed by actually hearing a real word. So they go around, they ban nude dancing, they ban certain words that we all know, they ban music on the radio. They tell us what we can play and what we cannot play. They tell us what ideas we can express and what we cannot express. And every year, it just gets a little bit harder and harder to say what you want to say. But there's no danger. It's nothing to worry about. We live in a democracy, after all. All I want to know is who elects the Supreme Court. It ain't us. Well, unfortunately, we seem to be out of time. The police are here to take me away. But that's what happens when you shoot off a little bit too much. We'll be back next week, hopefully. And, keep your eyes on the newspapers. Keep your minds on the things that are important. And right now I'm trying to find my outro. Well, since I can't find my outro... Oh, there it is. I found it. And a lot of people ask what this music is. It comes from Roger Waters. From a record called The Body, released in 1970. Probably banned today, but it was released then. If you have any interesting stories about fights against censorship or anything like that, fights for freedom, for individual expression, you can either call us or send it to us. Our phone number is 632-6901. We're not taking any more calls tonight. And our address is Brain Damage Care of WUSB State University at Stony Brook, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. Stay tuned for a Cabaret No Sound Test. I'll be back again next week. Stay safe. Brick upon brick.